Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. College is held up as the goal for young Americans, and for many, it is and should be, but not for everybody. A new report says we're letting down high school students and grads who would be better off on a different path, a path of hands-on skills and strong vocational education as a first, proud choice. This hour, On Point, rethinking alternatives to college. You can join the conversation. Does college really make sense for everybody? What would a good, strong, alternative path look like? You can comment on our website as well, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today in the studio is Robert Schwartz. He's professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, leader of the Pathways to Prosperity Project, which has released a big report calling for a rethink of the American goal of college for all and much more and better vocational education. Bob Schwartz, welcome to On Point.
Thanks very much, Tom.
This is a hot topic. People are really thinking about this. Nobody knows exactly where the jobs are. Everybody knows how much college costs. You write in this report, the American system for preparing young people to lead productive and prosperous lives as adults is clearly badly broken. What's the problem? What are you proposing?
The problem is that we, unlike virtually every other developed country, rely solely on our college system to help young people get from high school to work. And we have kids have clearly gotten the message that college is important. If you survey kids in high school, 90% of them say they're going off to college. Mm-hmm. About 70% of high school graduates actually do start off in college. But the dirty little secret is that even from our four-year institutions, barely more than half actually graduate.
Wow.
And if you look at our 25-year-old population and ask what proportion of 25-year-olds have a college degree, it's about 30% have a bachelor's degree, and it's been stuck basically around that number for about a decade. Another 10% have an associate's degree. That's 40%. What is our strategy for helping the other 60% of young people get themselves the skills and start they need to get into the workforce? That's the big issue that we're trying to get people to actually focus on.
Now, President Obama has said, he said in his State of the Union address, he wants to be first in the world in driving American kids to college. You're saying maybe not.
Well, it's interesting. The president has said two different things. You're right. He has focused on increasing the college completion rate, and that clearly ought to be a priority. We should be trying to make sure that colleges do a better job of actually holding on to the young people who enroll and giving them a degree at the end, assuming they do the work. But he also said something else, which we do believe in and support, which is that all young people need some form of post-secondary education or training to get started in life. And we think that somehow the college for all message has gotten focused entirely on our four-year institutions. And we think there's just an awful lot of work to be done strengthening two-year institutions and strengthening other institutions that can give kids credentials that have some currency in the workplace. Apprenticeship programs, for example, that the trade unions run, the workforce development programs that community-based organizations run. And we think if we actually had a more robust set of options for kids in high school, many more would choose to move, get themselves more quickly into the labor market with skills rather than going off and really drifting through four-year institutions.
So you're not talking not just college here, certainly not just four-year college, but not just college at all. You're also looking at high school. You've got a big emphasis here on vocational education, voc ed. I mean, that's been kind of the stepsister in the education system.
Absolutely right.
What are you envisioning?
Yeah, we always we always say vocational education is great for other people's children, but not our own. I mean, that often tends to be the case, and we have allowed our vocational system to really, to some degree, kind of run down. It's not to say that we don't have really good examples of high quality vocational education in high schools, but it's still basically a second class system.
Paint the picture of your dream and what and why?
Well, once you look outside the borders of the U.S., you can begin to see directions in which we might move. I had the good luck to take part in a 16-country study last spring called Learning for Jobs, looking at how other countries, particularly European countries, help their young people get from high school to work. And a particular example that I'm really struck by, I mean, the The big generalization here is that virtually all the countries in Central and Northern Europe, by the time kids are 16, kids have choices. And between 40 and 70% of young people in Switzerland, Austria, Germany, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland opt for programs that link work and learning, get them into the workplace with the kinds of skills that they need. These programs have strong employer participation. They're not a second chance system. These are mainstream
systems. I mean, we have choices in a way, you know, sort of college or junior college or McDonald's.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
It's not quite that stark, but it's something like that.
That is actually right. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but I remember a while ago hearing that something like 10% of young people at some point work in a McDonald's or another, you know, fast food kind of organization.
Whereas Europe, your writing gets people into really focused vocational training, not just broad stuff, here's how to make a broom handle, but much more focused, like what?
Well, I spent a week looking at the German system, which is probably, in some ways, the model kind of apprenticeship system in Europe. There, more than half the young people come into programs that really cover the whole range of occupations, white collar as well as blue collar, high tech as well as low tech, banking, insurance, IT, engineering. There are 3 or 4 year programs. The kids typically are spending 3 to 4 days a week at the workplace, and then the rest of their time they're in classrooms. But the learning that they're doing in the schooling part of their life is totally aligned with and supporting, presenting them with a kind of underlying theory, if you will, for the application that they get to see in the workplace.
Does this create the workforce that then churns out BMWs and Mercedes exports?
You bet. And the highly skilled worker is still a very respected figure in the culture of Germany. I think part of our problem is we really do have this status system that has somehow diminished respect for the kind of skills that and craft knowledge that young European workers proudly develop, and that really keeps the backbone of a manufacturing economy going.
Craft knowledge is a good phrase, but you're saying these people are not going into university; they're going into more vocationally oriented and education plus work formulas or programs from the get-go. They're making a decision pretty early.
Correct. And in some countries, in Germany in particular, the schools make the decisions for them much too early, and we really reject that. We think Finland is my model, the best example I know. Finland's the highest performing country in Europe. It's the country where social class background is the least predictive of academic performance. It's the country where the gap between the top achieving kids and the bottom is the narrowest. They don't track in Finland. Tracking was outlawed years ago. At 16, 43% of Finnish kids, and this is in an economy that always shows up in the very top tier in the sort of World Economic Forum analysis of economies, 43% of those kids opt for these 3-year mixed work and learning programs.
But we've got the numbers here that the Census Department put out years ago now, and everybody cites them, saying if, you know, adult work life high school graduates can expect on average to earn about $1.2 million, bachelor's degree 2.1, master's 2.5, a PhD 3.4, professional degrees 4.4 million. It makes it look like you're crazy not to get a bachelor's degree.
Right. It's true as a generalization that the more education you have, the better off you're going to be in the labor market.
But that's pretty important. That's income. That's lifestyle.
Those are aggregate statistics that mask a lot of differences internally. I saw a piece in a Florida newspaper the other day saying that now the average earnings for community college graduates in the state of Florida is higher than the average earnings for BA holders from the university system in Florida.
And I suppose those low high school grad earnings, you could say they are in part because we don't give them skills. If they came out with real skills or headed into a program that would give them those, they'd make more.
That's exactly right. And I think that obviously it isn't simply how much education you have, but what kind and what the education is for. A huge weakness in our system is that we simply don't give kids early enough information about careers, what the requirements are, what the pathways are. So too many kids just drift off to college with no clear purpose in mind. Whether they graduate or not, I don't know what the current unemployment rates are among BA holders, but
pretty high.
They're pretty high.
How do we pay for this? We can barely, it seems, pay for the education we do already. How do you add all this vocational education? How do you organize such a thing?
Well, this is a long-term project, obviously. This is not something that happens overnight. These European systems have been built over generations. But a real key is the investment of employers. Employers participate, 25% of employers roughly in both Germany and Switzerland participate in the apprenticeship system. They do it because out of enlightened self-interest. They know it's in their interest to invest in the development of the next generation of workers. About half the costs of those systems are borne by employers, and again, out of self-interest.
But they'd be training kids for fairly narrow kind of whatever they do, that's what they want. Is that a good thing?
Well,
what happens when that company moves its operations to China?
Yeah, that's
and you're just trained to do one thing there.
That's a big challenge. That is, you clearly don't want to too narrowly focus the training. You want to give kids a kind of underlying set of skills that really are transferable. But again, the European systems, they think in terms of not just preparing kids narrowly for a job or even for a career. Mm-hmm. They think about this in a kind of larger frame of youth development, helping kids make a transition from adolescence to adulthood with much, you know, many more adults involved in this process,
maybe
not just leaving it to schools
to
and teachers.
Or the market. But maybe that factory is less likely to move to China if they've trained a local workforce. It's all geared up for exactly what they're doing.
Well, at least the last time I looked at unemployment rates, particularly in Switzerland and Germany, they're doing pretty well. And by the way, the gap between their youth unemployment and their adult unemployment is much, much narrower than it is here. There really is this sense of these countries design these programs in the context of a broad kind of youth strategy. I mean, they clearly put a real priority on building a system that says to young people, if you do your part and work hard, we will help you make a successful transition from adolescence into the workforce.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about real vocational training and whether we need a better and proud alternative to college. Robert Schwartz joins me. He's professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Pathways to Prosperity is the project he's working on, and a big new report saying we do not offer enough of an alternative. Too many American kids are going to college, not necessarily ending up in the right place in terms of work and skills and the economy. Bob Schwartz is with me in the studio. Joining us right now from Richmond, Virginia, is Matthew Crawford, author of Shop Class as Soul Craft, an inquiry into the value of work. He made a splash with it a couple of years ago, the PhD who was repairing motorcycles. He's now a research fellow at the University of Virginia's Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture. Matthew Crawford, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So how are we doing on this front, and should we do more like what?
Well, you know, I think one point is that we talk a lot about diversity in education, but we don't do a very good job of accommodating diversity of dispositions. I mean, the question is, what's going to spark someone's love of learning? And for some people, including some who are plenty smart, it's taking things apart and figuring out how they work. I don't think we're doing a very good job of sort of accommodating that style of learning.
And yet, if you get into apprenticeship programs early on, you will have people who say, that's much too narrow. What about the fuller education of a human being, of a young American?
Yeah, right. And that ties into this claim that the economy demands workers who are flexible. But I think, you know, when you go deep into some particular art, it trains your powers of concentration and perception. You become more discerning about the objects of this particular skill, and if all goes well, I think you come to care in a visceral way about excellence in this one domain, usually because you've been initiated into an ethic of caring about what you're doing. That's often by the example of some mentor who embodies that spirit of craftsmanship.
What do you see young Americans caring about now when they kind of stampede into college?
Well, it's a good question. I actually taught high school briefly, and what they had me teaching was Latin. And the kids, most of them had been told they had to take it in order to get their SAT scores up, in order to get into college. And the class, frankly, was a disaster. It might have gone better if I was a more gifted teacher, but I kept wishing that I had a Ritalin fogger in there just to sort of maintain order, because people were really quite checked out. And I kept thinking that if I'd been able to take some of these kids aside and said, hey, let's rebuild this engine together, that some of them might perk right up.
What did they think they should be aiming for? What's the big message that our culture is giving, you know, students at that transition point in life right now about aspiration?
Well, I think our aspirations have kind of narrowed into certain channels over the last, I don't know, 30 years or something. You know, everyone was supposed to want to be a internet tycoon or investment banker or management consultant. Of course, few people actually became any of those things, but these were, in a sense, I think the prestigious peaks that cast a shadow over the whole sort of plane of work or create a rank order of value that we orient by. But in the Great Recession, as it's now being called, I think all that got scrambled. And if there's any kind of silver lining to the mess we're in economically, it might be that the question of what a good job looks like is a little more open now than it has been for a while.
So what might a better system look like then, where, I mean, if everybody's just trying to gallop off and become an investment banker, A, we know that won't happen. As big as Wall Street is, there are not enough jobs there for that. And B, what kind of economy does that leave us with? I mean, you see what Bob Schwartz is proposing here. He's saying we need a much stronger, healthier response to that. Not everybody is buying it. You know, Jay Matthews wrote in the Washington Post, this is fantasy land. Not going to happen in this country. We're not going to get companies to cooperate with public schools in that way. What kind of models do you think we should be thinking about, Matthew?
Well, Bob mentioned Germany, and I think there is an important or an interesting lesson to be taken from Germany. It's a narrow one, and it is that in Germany, famously, you have to have a license to do anything. And what that does is it creates a barrier to entry for occupations, which keeps wages high. And so young people, knowing the security and wages that come with reaching that licensed practitioner status, it makes them willing to accept much lower wages in the early stages of their training. And that, in turn, makes firms willing to take on apprentices. So there's a kind of virtuous circle there that's created by a license to practice requirement. And that's something that the state can do in order to sort of bring companies on board with the idea of apprenticeship.
But that's Germany, where you have to sort of register with the government about how many radios you own and what religion you practice. I mean, we're part of a different cultural tradition. Do we have the stuff to line things up that way? Are we too libertarian for that, Matt?
Well, that's a good point. I think we, you know, in the U.S. have this sort of libertarian aversion to any kind of barrier to market entry like that, such as a licensing requirement, because it's sort of anti-free market. But at the same time, we have this progressive insistence on a high minimum wage. And when you take those two things together, it collapses the wage differential that, you know, rightly comes with experience. And the result, I think, is that it makes it harder for a young person to imagine a trajectory for himself into the skilled trades.
Bob Schwartz, what about the Jay Matthews complaint? This is fantasy land. We're not going to do this in this country.
Well, Jay kindly gave me a chance to respond.
Yes.
We went back and forth over the weekend.
You softened him up a little bit, but you heard his first response there, longtime education reporter at the Washington Post.
Right, I did. And I understand as I said initially, we're really just trying to put a big problem on the table.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the solution is going to be a complex and long-term one, but it's one we need to start on. Just a couple of comments in response to Matt. I mean, first, I think his comments about the highly regulated German economy are right, but if you go kind of next door to Switzerland, their economy is much less regulated, looks much more like ours, and the apprenticeship system works. The point of looking at these European examples is not to think that we can simply pick up lock, stock, and barrel a system that's embedded in a different culture and transplant it. It's a question of looking for ideas, ways to adapt some of the principles, at least. I wanted to just underscore a couple of things that Matt said. I mean, one is I totally buy the notion that lighting a fire under kids, finding something that ignites their passion, exposing them to some form of expertise, some realization that there really are kind of standards of work or standards of practice. And it can take a variety of forms for young people. And thinking,
you mean studying at the elbow of somebody who knows a trade very, very well, or
right,
a craft or art? Or
correct. When you send kids out into workplaces, in a structured workplace learning environment, what they see is adults who take care with what they do, who have a degree of passion and a degree of expertise. And a lot of kids, for a lot of kids, that really opens up possibilities for them. You know, the other,
just seeing that, and
being in an environment in which there are adult expectations, as distinct from sitting in classrooms. We haven't so far talked about the first big piece of this problem, which is the 25% of young people don't even make it to the graduation point in high school. And when you look at surveys of kids, why do you drop out? Two things come through. One is just the boredom. But the second very related point is that kids don't see a connection between what they're being asked to do in the Latin class that he was just describing and some future for themselves. And getting kids, you know, when you're 16 or so, you know, kids want to be, they want to be in a different environment. They want to get on with their lives. For a lot of kids sitting in classrooms, you know, saying the reason to complete high school is so you can sit in classrooms in college for another four years.
To become what? An investment banker? Well, not me, they may say.
That's a turnoff. And I think the, you know, kids drop out of high school or college for lots of different reasons. I don't mean
can I jump in there?
Yes,
please.
Matthew, please.
Yeah, I think there's actually a lot of kids sitting in school feeling like it's, frankly, unworthy of their full attention and engagement. And the question is, you know, what kind of environment it offers a model for full engagement? And I think part of the appeal of going to university is that it offers a kind of ladder to climb, right? If I'm admitted to a prestigious school,
let's go somewhere.
I feel enlarged by it. And it's natural for a young person to want to be sort of certified by an institution and one that is exclusive rather than, you know, just kind of promiscuous. And
I hate to frame it that way. You know, public universities across this country, a lot of them do a great job. They may not have the highest prestige stamp, but I wouldn't just call it promiscuous. That's egalitarian, democratic education.
Yeah, but that's that. I mean, to get into a good state university, I think feels to a young person like they've been certified.
Okay, fair enough. You know, we've got so many listeners who want to jump in here. Let me turn to them if I may. Jack first in Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Your topic is really getting played out in my family. I have a daughter who recently got her master's degree and is currently teaching children who are blind.
Okay.
And my son, a couple years behind her, equally bright kid, but not an academic, a hardworking kid, got out of high school, surfed Costa Rica for a couple years, always had a passion for trains. And he came back from Costa Rica, started working nights on a small freight railroad shifting cars around, became an engineer, and competed successfully against hundreds of applicants for 11 spots on a class to become a commuter rail engineer, which he currently is. Now, I look down the arc of their work lives, and my daughter won't come close. And I'd suggest that probably a lot of college graduates wouldn't come close to the salary and benefits my son's going to accrue.
Does he feel good about where he is, Jack? Is he, you know?
He loves the job. I think, you know, I think it's a respected job. It's a very responsible job. Can't be outsourced very easily. Railroad retirement is sound. It's a wonderful retirement system. Very strong union. They take their tough, proud men and women. They take great pride in their work. So I would argue that he's at least as well-positioned as my daughter with her master's degree.
Jack, I love your family story. I mean, it lays it out very clearly. Bob, I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but you're two different people, two different tracks. It's not clear which one's going to be better here at all, and it may be the locomotive engineers.
I think that's right. I hear a lot of stories like Jack's these days. Unfortunately, from some of the stories, families talk about the problem of the kind of social stigma that's attached to anything other than the college path. Have you experienced any of that, Jack, among your friends or colleagues?
Jack, I'm afraid we lost Jack already. But let us get one more here, if I may. Des Moines, Iowa. John, you're on the air, John.
Yeah. Till recently, I worked for workforce development here in Iowa.
Okay.
And about 40 years ago, Governor Hughes set up some junior colleges and told people, employers, come to Iowa, bring your key people, executives, engineers with you, but no workers. I'll train all the machinists, bookkeepers you need. And it really turned Iowa's economy around. But then they shipped all the jobs off to Mexico, Singapore, etc. And as long as they can outsource the jobs, I don't care how much training you have, it isn't going to mean anything. And another thing, on universities, there was a study a couple years ago, and there's about, the myth is you go to university, you're blessed, you're going to have, you know, $120,000 job, et cetera, et cetera. Or you're going to become a senator because of all the people you met.
Right.
Well, it turns out in this world, there's only about 20 or 30 universities like Stanford, Harvard, the Sorbonne, Oxford, where that's true. The rest of the universities, in their own way, are just community colleges written large.
Well, I might beg to differ there, but let me ask you if I may, John, because I've got a Facebook comment here from your state, Iowa. Brittany writes, she says, thank you for doing a story on this. She writes, I work in a manufacturing training program in an industry-based part of Iowa. We have free AAS degrees, great jobs paying $50,000 plus, little or no interest to, and little to no interest in it. She says she's got over 250 job openings in her area and about a dozen qualified candidates. She needs solutions fast. She says we can't afford to lose manufacturers or anywhere else in Iowa or anywhere else in the U.S. She's got more jobs than takers there, John.
Well, I got a feeling they're probably leaving some things out. Because I know we've got people desperately looking for jobs.
Yeah,
and
no doubt.
I'd like to know where this miracle place is.
Okay. Somewhere in Iowa, Brittany says, Matthew Crawford, we've just got you a couple of more minutes. What about this concern? Okay, give people great vocational education, and then the job goes overseas. If there's no plug in the bathtub, that all the water drains out no matter what you do. What about that, Matt?
Yeah, I think John made an important point. It's what kind of jobs are offshoreable? And there's an economist at Princeton named Alan Blinder who's been making the point that the distinction that's emerging in the labor market is not the conventional one between those with more education and those with less. It's rather, can your job be delivered, can your service be delivered over a wire or not? And the insight here is that you can't fix a leaking toilet over the internet, and you can't do it from Singapore. It has to be done on site. And so the kind of skilled trades that do have to be done on site have a certain level of security that manufacturing never does.
And we've also, let me put one more to you. Here's a web comment from Nick who says, I think everybody should go to college in one form or another, even if you're learning a trade. I firmly believe every citizen should know and understand how our government works, our basic rights, biology, master our language, the basic skills to good citizenship, even for those in the trades. Nick wants college degrees. What do you say, Matthew?
I think college is a wonderful thing if you can spare the time and money to do it. I think it also just bears remarking that college isn't the only place where you can educate yourself. I've known a lot of people in the trades who were very widely read, and I think we have this sense that you have to do this in an institution. And universities themselves seem to have abandoned that mission of liberal education to a disturbing degree. So in some sense, I think we're all on our own when it comes to acquiring a genuinely liberal education.
Hey, Matthew, the last time you were out talking about shop class as soulcraft, you were repairing motorcycles. Now I'm looking here, and you're at the University of Virginia for the Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture. Did you give up the craft path?
No, the shop is still open. I met at UVA about one day a week, and the shop in Richmond, Virginia is still going.
Still satisfying? What are you working on there? What's the bike up on the rack?
Right now it's a Triumph from 1971, and then in the queue is a Norton from about the same era, and a BMW, and a couple other bikes.
You got it all going on. Matthew Crawford, author of Shop Class as Soul Craft, thank you very much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about real vocational training and whether we need a better and proud alternative to college. Robert Schwartz is with us. He's at Harvard's Graduate School of Education in the Pathways to Prosperity Project. They've just put out a big report saying, you know, our path to employment is broken and college isn't the right way for everybody. We'll hear in just a moment from a labor economist about whether or not the jobs are out there if you take the path Bob's describing. Let me go first to Deborah in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I'm in full agreement. I run a nonprofit agency here in Buffalo where a big part of what we do is helping teenagers find their way to the next thing. And when I first arrived, everything was focused on college. And frankly, even if everybody could afford to go to college, we still need people who do all the other things in society. We need people to be plumbers and to be electricians. And frankly, I have a graduate degree, and my friends who are plumbers make more money and have more job security than I do. So what we've done is bring in the exposure so that these kids can know that those are their options if that's what they want to choose and what it might look like once they get out after they have a trade.
Do you think it's a good idea to link apprenticeships or learning up with businesses? And do you think businesses would step up in the numbers required to act as an intake valve for all these young American kids looking for a...
Well, they might. And as I was listening just yesterday, I was meeting with a local business here. It's actually a national business, but they're a local facility. And they are interested in funding a program that we have that exposes girls to non-traditional female careers in the sciences and engineering and technology, because they are recognizing that they're having trouble filling those positions in their company, and they want to start exposing young people to those careers now. They need people who can solder computer boards and, you know, assemble things and do all those things that are hands-on, and they're recognizing that they don't think they can fill their workforce in the future.
Deborah, good luck to you there in Buffalo. I appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here from Bowling Green, Kentucky, and Martha. Hi, Martha. You're on the air.
Yes. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you know, Martha?
Yes, I'm so excited to be able to express, because this has been the most aggravation for me, is the emphasis on academics. And fortunately, I've owned my own business for over 40 years, and lately I've been asked to give lectures in a local high school and one of the junior highs on achievement and careers. And the first thing I do when I go in, and I say, who's in the AP classes? Hands go up, they're all the children in the front row. And then I go, so what do you get back here? What are you doing? What are your grades? Oh, you know, C's, whatever. I go, oh, what is your interest? Up comes up cars, mechanics, artists.
Yep.
I go to the back of the room, and I say, your time is now. Technology is so advanced. You are the people that have the ability to sense what with your senses. It's the way you feel things and put things together. And then you see all these people up here, what do you want to be? They say doctors, lawyers. Well, I say, great. So let me tell you, kids in the back, see those kids in the front? When they get their student loans paid off, you can charge them a lot of money to fix their cars and do artwork in their homes. Your time is now. And what happens...
Do they believe it? Do they buy it, Martha? Do the kids in the back of the room buy it?
I don't know, but I try to be so dramatic with it. I really do. I said, because... What, and then let me tell you something else interesting. Hmm. I go into my granddaughter's elementary school, art everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I go into the junior high, which really blew me away. They had this wonderful sculpture made out of paper bags hanging in the office. That was the first thing that greeted me.
What do you take from that? What do you take from it?
Amazing. Okay. Then I go into the high school, nothing. Wonder what would happen if they just put an engine in the greeting room, when the parents walked in, when people walked in and had a big sign, this was put together by whatever way.
Martha, you make me want to get grease on my hands. I hear it loud and clear. I appreciate your call. That is great testimony. Let us hold that right there if you would. Joining us right now from Washington is Paul Harrington, labor economist, director of Drexel University's new Center for Labor Markets and Policy. Paul, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
If we put a bigger emphasis on vocational education, apprenticeships, the whole works, try the Germany-style approach, are there going to be jobs out there, enough jobs out there that pay well enough in this country for young Americans who would put their foot on that path?
I think there's two ways to think about this, Tom. One, in the immediate term, we have a tremendously excess-supplied labor market in construction, manufacturing.
Right.
A lot of blue-collar occupations, but that's also true at the white-collar level. We have very large numbers of kids coming out of the post-secondary system, associate's degrees, bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, law degrees, that can't find jobs in the college labor market. So in the short term, we are just in an oversupplied economy, and we have to get a set of macroeconomic strategies to get us out of that. The second part of the answer, though, I think, is a little bit more optimistic, and that is that this is a labor market that I think that we reward occupational proficiencies, basic skills, and early work experience, and that when both career and technical educations are well organized at the secondary level and at the post-secondary level, the evidence is very strong that we get good gains for kids, and those gains persist over their lives. So I think that in the end of the day, everyone's facing a weak labor market, but people that, you know, youngsters that are able to develop those proficiencies will get a substantial leg up.
Is the president wrong to say we should be, you know, going like crazy to be to have the most college graduates in the world, to be tops in that? Is that wrong?
Yes, he is wrong.
But don't we need that? I mean, don't we ultimately have to compete up in that tier? We can't just repair each other's plumbing.
Well, I think the answer is that there are very, very high returns to college degrees. But those returns are contingent upon the major field of study in which people get degrees in, and are contingent upon getting job access in college labor market jobs. And there are big, big earnings differences depending on your major field and whether or not you use your college degree, you use the knowledge, skills, and abilities that are developed there.
But if those high returns are there, how can you tell kids to go off and get a trade? I mean, what is it, 7% of private industry in this country is unionized now? Are they going to have enough, you know, labor leverage to get a decent return on that apprenticeship that they put in?
Well, I think you got to ask yourself what the alternative is. And the alternative is if you don't, you know, get that early work experience, develop those occupational proficiencies, you'll get earnings you'll have earnings that are reduced by about 20 to 25% over your working life. So for young kids who are not going to get a four-year college degree, who are not going to major in areas that have high economic returns, particularly in mathematic-dominated fields, and who don't get jobs in the college labor market, the answer is those are good bets.
Do you think that American industry would step up and really be supportive of this, or is it already so outsourcing-focused that their attitude would be, why bother? We can do this in Sichuan.
Well, I think the answer is that relationships have to be built with firms, that you know, you just can't pass a program and say, yeah, let's all go do this. That these relationships need to be built from the ground up. So if you look at cities like Boston and Philadelphia, where there's been efforts, long-term efforts to build relationship between high schools and the employer community, we get very high degrees of employer involvement, and we get improved job access for kids. At the post-secondary level, certainly my home institution, Drexel University, has worked very hard to build these kind of relationships. But at the end of the day, Tom, the labor market's a social institution, and we make hires based on these connections or relationships, and if you don't have them, then it won't work.
Paul Harrington at Drexel University, thank you very much for being with us today, Paul.
My pleasure.
Let me get Chris right here in Fremont, Nebraska. Chris, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story, Chris?
Well, I have four children. My oldest son has Asperger's syndrome. He is on the autism spectrum.
Right, right.
He's extremely bright. But his schoolwork that would be required to get into college does not show his intelligence.
Right, not his thing, not his way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this year he was offered the opportunity to do a school-to-career program.
Okay.
But it's only for a quarter. He is working at an office supply store, and basically they're just giving him junk computers and junk printers. And if he fixes them, that's great. If not, they don't really care. And luckily, that's his love, and he's very good at it and very gifted at it. But if he didn't already have that skill, I think it would just be wasted time for him.
Do you see a career emerging here? He may like it, and that's no small thing, but do you see this as something that will support him, Chris?
Yes, definitely, yes. He does them actually on the side. He fixes people's computers,
yep.
But if he didn't have that skill, I think it would basically be a babysitting program
right.
for these high school kids.
Chris, we wish him good luck, and I appreciate your call. Bob Schwartz, what about it? How do you keep this from becoming, you know, high school kids siphoned off to do junk work and not really?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think all too often, again, because we have not treated these programs as serious learning programs, thinking that just shoveling a kid out the door and sending him off to a workplace without a structured program to actually build skills obviously does no one any good. In Chris's case, she's lucky that her son had those skills to begin with. But that's not at all the way the best of these programs, either in the U.S. or outside the U.S., work.
So that's not what you're looking
that
to recreate.
Correct.
And you'd have to make distinctions. Rutland, Vermont. Bruce, you're on the air, Bruce.
Hi. from personal experience, it seems to me that employers in this country aren't interested in a skilled employee who cares about the product. What employers are interested in is how many units can you make, how quickly. And until employees begin to feel like they're more than a tool, I don't see that apprenticeship programs are going to be useful, because I'd rather be the owner, and I'd like to be making all the money, and that makes more sense than having somebody bark at me about working fast.
Yeah, Bruce, I've got it. That's loud and clear. And Bob, I mean, that's powerful, because if it's one thing if you're in Germany, you've got a great export economy, you're doing all this high-end engineering manufacturing, you've got a social tradition that gives you pride of place when you're working in that factory, but you see Bruce's fear. You got managers who don't care about what they're making. It's just, you know, price per widget and barking at you.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things that's difficult about this kind of conversation is that we tend to generalize about employers and about, you know, kind of industry more broadly. I mean,
there's a big spectrum.
There's a big spectrum. And if you come back to the Iowa example that we had, with one person saying, I've got, you know, jobs going begging, and another person saying, you know, all of the jobs are overseas. And I think if you put that together with Paul Harrington's point, I mean, to me, the big take home here is you've got to kind of disaggregate this problem. Mm-hmm. There clearly are sectors, healthcare being an obvious one, where there are a ton of jobs that require some post-secondary education or training, but not a bachelor's degree, and where there's a clear demand. It ought to be relatively easy to organize employers in fields where there are skill shortages to actually get engaged with both schools and community colleges. By the way, my own bias here is that I think for a bunch of reasons in the U.S., it will be much easier to engage employers with community colleges first and then to build programs, map backward, if you will, to connect those programs to the high schools.
Are you assuming that if we did this, over time it would draw those jobs back home, that it would staunch some of that flow of jobs overseas?
You know, that's beyond my pay grade. I don't know the answer to that, but I do think that behaving in this kind of fatalistic fashion, as if, you know, all is lost and it's not worth investing in building the skills of young people, is a huge mistake.
Amen to that. Lindsay in Buffalo, New York. Lindsay, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm really interested in the idea of offering vocational training for young people, especially people who are possibly in university. I went to school for fine art and I graduated with a bachelor's degree.
But I
studied sculpture, and so I was welding, but I didn't actually end up coming out with a certification that said I could weld. So I've been having a lot of trouble breaking into the job market and figuring out where my qualifications are.
The one ads for sculptor is just not exactly bustling.
No, not exactly.
So do you what are you thinking about a more industrial welding job now? Do you wish you'd gone that path in the first place or not, Lindsay?
I wish that option would have been more talked about.
Why do you think you didn't do it? I'm just curious, Lindsay.
I think because I felt the need to just go to university and get a bachelor's degree. That was where everybody was pushing me, and that was kind of just the assumed route to take.
If you'd gone to voc ed in high school, would you have felt, is there a stigma with that?
Possibly. Usually the people who were going to vocational school were more of underperforming, they weren't really very high academic achievers, so it was kind of a second option.
Lindsay, it sounds like it's time to go out there and get that certification, get on a welding crew. Good luck to you. I appreciate your call. Bob, we just got a couple of minutes here, but you hear right there, I mean, that is the way it's worked in many places, not all by any means, but the voc ed has been the sort of the forget about it path, the whatever path. You're saying make it almost a kind of a co-equal, proud path, and we'll be better off. But how do you How do you gear toward that?
Well, I think actually I wanted to pick up on something mm-hmm. that Lindsay said, which I think is important here, which she was really saying that in addition to building connecting work and learning opportunities in high schools, that ought to be more available to people in college. If you look mm-hmm. at the college dropout problem, a huge piece of it, I think, particularly for urban kids attending urban institutions, is they're having to work while they're going to school. The work that they're doing typically is disconnected from what they're trying to study.
Fast food and, or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so those institutions like Northeastern and Boston, for example, where the work experience is tightly connected to the academic program experience, kids come out knowing a lot that they've got a leg up in their career. They've had the opportunity to see whether or not this is the right field and switch fields if that doesn't work. And they're not in the situation where their work life and their studying life are in conflict.
What are you hearing from the big world of education? Are people saying, yes, let's go, let's do it? Or, oh, sorry, we've got to stay on this treadmill. We've got to get our kids, you know, into college and forget about it.
Mixed things. Let me come back to one last point, if I can, and that is about President Obama's goal. I think there's a way to both achieve the goal of increased college completion and address the problems that we put on the table. And that really is to focus much, much more on our two-year institutions, getting kids certificates and associate degrees, which really do have currency in the workplace. If you look at other countries, that's where we're falling behind, but much less so in the four-year degree completion.
So there's the opportunity, as you've framed it out, and maybe just the right opportunity for a lot of kids who now feel like they've got to go to college and may not be the right place for them at all. This is an important message, and I appreciate the work you've done on it and your time with us today, Bob. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Robert Schwartz, he is a leader of Harvard Graduate School of Education's Pathways to Prosperity Project, just put out their big new report, and you hear all the dynamics behind it. Listeners, thanks for joining us today. Good luck to you, good luck to your kids, all American kids here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.